Welcome to the Livecast. You're listening to Inspiring Guest Loyalty with special guest Horst Schulze, a world-renowned expert in the hospitality industry and former chief of operations and president of Ritz-Carlton. In this podcast, Schulze shares his hospitality manifesto, the three key subconscious expectations, and how to strengthen guest loyalty. For the next hour, listen along as the man who set the bar in luxury hotels explains how he built a culture that values service above all.
Most of you are in hospitality. By the way, I have done your jobs. No matter what it is you're doing, well, that's not true. I didn't do engineering. I didn't do accounting. But I worked as a busboy, as a dishwasher, as a housekeeper, front desk, waiter, in the kitchen. I've done it. I started quite a few years ago. In fact, I give you a little bit my background so that you can relate more to the rest of the story. And so I will tell you from the beginning, I went into the hotel business. And if you follow me, anybody can hook into what I'm going to share with you. Anybody, no matter what you're doing, you can hook into it. I remember I opened the Ritz-Carlton in Bali many years ago, about 25 years ago, teaching the employees. And when I ran Ritz-Carlton, I opened every Ritz-Carlton, from the first one in Atlanta, for the first 55 hotels, if that was in Shanghai or Hawaii or Philadelphia, I opened the hotels, I trained the people. And so I was in Bali many years ago. Just be with me on that story for a moment. And I better watch what time I have. I'm supposed to speak 3 hours, is that correct? No, so okay. But I get carried away, so I have to be watch out where I am. So I was in Bali and trained the employees, and separately, same time, but separately, I trained managers about leadership. So that was 20 years later. In the meantime, I left Ritz-Carlton and started my own hotel company. The owner of the hotel management companies, you are an unusual company because you own the hotels and you manage the hotels. Large hotel companies don't own hotels. Ritz-Carlton didn't own hotels. We managed hotels for others. We put our name on and so on and managed hotels. Well, back in Bali, that hotel was owned by an Indonesian billionaire. I was teaching the employees, a major hotel. I was teaching the employees. Left Ritz-Carlton in the meantime. The owner let Ritz-Carlton go, that was 20 years later, and called me if I would, with my new company, manage that hotel, which we did. We created a contract. So now they introduced me in Bali to the tourist industry and so on. We had a big reception, and a young man came to me. I hope you get this. A young man came to me and said, can I talk to you for a moment? I know there are 1,000 people, you have no time, but I have to tell you something. I said, what is it? When you were teaching us, and when it was a Ritz-Carlton, I was a banquet server. I sneaked in when you were teaching the managers. I listened to every word. When you left the room, I took the flip charts on which you wrote. I still have them. And he repeated the stuff that I taught 20 years earlier. And he said, I followed your direction. I'm now the general manager in this luxury hotel in Ubud. He became the manager. He started us as a banquet server, but he listened. So there is something in it for everybody. It's just up to you what you take out of it, what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you facts, by the way, only facts. So if you don't agree with me, that means you're wrong. Because I'm giving you facts. So it means you're wrong enough. So I started years ago when I was 11 years old, growing up in a small village in Germany, And for some reason, I don't know why, went to my parents and said, I want to work in the hotel business. They said, yeah, yeah, okay. 11 years old. I kept on saying it. Pretty soon, that's not what you did in Germany at that time. You went to a technical shop and you were, all technical jobs were honorable. Even if you would be a carpenter, that's an honorable, a roofer, that's honorable. But in the hotel business, it's pretty soon my parents nearly were embarrassed about it, but they kept on insisting on it. So soon my parents thought we cannot talk about them anymore. And they looked for a job. They got advice from an agency, government agency, how to grow a career in this business and so on. So they found me a busboy job, apprentice job, busboy job, about 100 miles away. Why 100 miles? It was the best hotel in the region. So I left. My parents took me there. And as they take me there, and before that, once they knew where I would work, they told me, we could never go to a hotel like that. This is only for very important people. Now behave yourself accordingly, and so on. And that's the last thing my mother admonished me as she took me to this job away from home. By the way, my mother never forgave herself that she let me go away from home when I was 14. But there I am. She admonished me the last moment. Now understand, behave yourself, take showers, wash your socks, and so on, like a mother would do. And then she left me, and I lived in a dorm room with four other kids working in that hotel. I was very lucky because the maitre d' was that I worked for as a busboy. Busboy at that time meant everything. You clean the table, you clean the room, you wash the dishes afterwards and so on. So I've done your jobs. I know the pain, I know the pleasure too of working in this business. Believe me. So working in that hotel, that maitre d' was exceptional. He was exceptional in relating to us. He told us, don't come to work here. Come to be special. Come to work to create excellence. You don't have to work more hours, but you can create excellence and create rather than work. I heard it, but it didn't make much sense to me at that time. Not too much. Wednesdays, I went to hotel school. Typical German deal. You work and then you take a trade school, hotel school. And after I was working 1.5 years, I was not quite 16, the teacher in our class asked, write an essay what you now think about this business, what you now feel about this business. 3 pages, essay. You go back and you think, what am I going to write? And that next night, I worked in the restaurant. I worked in the corner over there, and I could feel the maitre d' just entered the room. And I turned around, saw him as usual. You could feel it. He had a presence. He would have never entered this room without looking perfect. He was a man of perfection, of somebody who loved his profession, who created excellence every day in his profession. Very important for a young man, a young kid to see this. And then I realized when he went to a table, now mind you, I was told when I arrived by the general manager, the guests are important, you are nothing. You're here to serve, to help serve. Our guests are very important, ladies and gentlemen. Remember that when you encounter any one of our guests. It was very clear to me, the guests were very important, we were not. But then I saw the maitre d' approaching a table. And I could sense it, could feel it. The guest on that table were proud that he came to the table. I watched that. That is a reversal from what I learned. I watched that. I saw him going to the next table and the next table. And then impressed by that. Because also he spoke French here and English there and German there. Different nationality guests. Very impressive. But what impressed me the most, the guests were proud that he came to your table. I could see it. I could see suddenly the guests think he is the most important person in the room. And we, the employees, thought he's the most important person in the room and in the hotel. And I went back and wrote an essay about it. And I named this essay, We Are Ladies and Gentlemen. We, the employees, serving ladies and gentlemen. We are ladies and gentlemen if Because I could see, if we define ourselves as excellence, we are human beings of excellence. I wrote that essay. And of course, it was my motto throughout my life. I made it a motto of its gentlemen and ladies and gentlemen. We can sentence ourselves to be servants or to be ladies and gentlemen by being excellent. Define ourselves. So if you like it or not, ladies and gentlemen, if you like it or not, you define yourself by what you do every day. Oh, I don't define myself at work. When then? At home while you watch TV? You define yourself by how you work. The excellence that you create. Not more hours, not more, but the excellence by what you do things. And that hit me so much at that time. And I wrote about an essay. And it impacted my life because not only, I would have probably forgotten about the essay, but truly, I tell you the truth, it's the only A I ever had. And the teacher made a big deal about it. He read the essay to the whole class and to other teachers that were invited into the room. So it was a big deal. So it impacted my life. That made a D who taught me, don't go to work to work. Come to work to be excellent. Create something special. Define yourself as somebody excellent. Where else to define it? You're there anyway. You're here anyway. May as well define yourself. May as well make the decision to be excellent. It's all a decision. So with that, after 3.5 years, I left there, worked in France for 3 years in Paris, worked in London. I truly worked in the greatest hotels in Europe, worked in London, worked in Switzerland and different places, Lausanne, Bern, worked Holland America Line. And then I worked in London and somebody said, would you want to come to America for a while? Sure, I took a job, was a job offered, came to America, went to San Francisco, worked as a waiter, as a room service waiter in Conrad Hilton, in the Hilton Hotel in San Francisco, was promoted to supervisor, et cetera, worked on, and then finally worked for Hilton again, worked in a private club, worked for Hilton, became a catering manager, assistant food and beverage director, left and went with Hyatt as food and beverage director, became rooms director, became general manager, became regional vice president, 10 hotels, and then became vice president operations food and beverage for the United States for Hyatt. And then somebody called me and said, we are starting a new hotel company in Atlanta. I have a hotel in construction, was supposed to be a Marriott, and another one supposed to be a Holiday Inn, but I cannot come to agreement with them. So I want to create my own brand, but we are developers and finance people, we need an operator. Would you join us? I said, I have no interest, I have a great job, I have golden handcuffs, I have everything I ever wanted with Hyatt. But they kept on calling me. And as they called me, I started to think about what would I do if I would go to Atlanta and start a new hotel company, a company that has no hotels but has two in construction. What would I do? And I started to dream. I started to dream, gee, that would be interesting, my own hotel company. I'm responsible for creating it. What would I do? And I had a vision. And I submit to you, I had a vision. And anybody in life has to have visions. Has to have vision where you will be. What will you be? What will your life be? Who will you be? Who will you be a year from now? Who will you be in 5 years from now? That's a vision. That creates a purpose. People will perish without purpose. Every philosopher, the first great philosopher, Aristotle wrote about that. If you don't have purpose, you have no fulfillment in life. There are two things that you need in life, that's purpose and belonging. He wrote, and thousands of people have written about after that. And as I started to see this vision, and I thought, I take the job and will make that my purpose. To create the finest hotel company in the world. That was a decision before I have a hotel.
It was a decision. It's a decision to be excellent. It's also a decision not to be excellent. That decision may be conscious or subconscious. But if you make a conscious decision to be excellent, and that was a question we said, we're going, and so what we said, what did we do? So we got together and I hired a few people that I knew from a hired company, obviously, that I worked with. And we sat down and had developed a dream. We developed a vision. We said, we will be respected as the finest hotel company in the world. The hotel was in construction in Atlanta. In the meantime, we bought an old, dilapidated hotel in Boston. It was available because the location was excellent. And it had a name. It was called Ritz-Carlton. And my market director said, if you buy that lousy hotel and this lousy name, I'm going to quit. And he did. He did. Because it was a dilapidated, lousy name. And we said, we're going to make it. But we closed that hotel and went into renovation for the next 2 years. And consequently, a year later, we opened our first hotel, the Ritz-Carlton in Buckhead in Atlanta, with the philosophy of all of us being ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen, act like ladies and gentlemen, behave like ladies and gentlemen, be ladies and gentlemen as we serve ladies and gentlemen, be excellent. So we decided what to be as a company. So let's look at that. What did we really do? I tell you what, we decided we will be the leader in this world in the hotel business. And I said, how are we going to do that? By being more sufficient, by satisfying our guests more than other hotels would satisfy them. And of course, be more efficient. Try not to waste money. That's what you have to do as a company, because we are in business, otherwise we wouldn't be in business. So how am I more sufficient to the customer? We decided we're going to be more sufficient to the customer. How are we going to be? By knowing what the customer wants. So we studied the customer and analyzed what they want. I worked, truly studied that. I spent huge money. I worked with behavioral analysts, with word analysts and so on, to understand what does the market want. And it became very simple after a while. And once we knew what the market wanted, we concentrate our processes, our work around what the market wants. That's what we did. And so what is a great company? What did we want to be? Consequently, let's look, what is a great company doing? Your operating company, what does an operating company do? Number one, by far number one, make sure the guest wants to come back. Customer loyalty is the most important thing an organization does. Customer loyalty. Make sure that the guest that comes in is loyal to you. And you do four things, but nothing can encroach on number one. Number two, what you do as a company, find new customers. Number three, what you do, get as much money as possible from the customer. You're in business, without losing them. And number four, what you do is efficiency. But the most important thing is to keep the customer. And that's what I want to concentrate on, what we did to keep the customer. That's it. That's what we concentrated on. What did we do? We knew what the customer, we started what the customer wants. And interesting enough, it's very simple. I know what your customers want, no matter what business you're in. I discussed that in many, many speeches, because it's so simple. I mean, those are facts. Studied facts. Analyzed facts. Whatever you buy, I know what you want when you buy something. Whatever it is you're going to buy. If it is an automobile or a house or a radio or a TV or a bottle of water. I use bottle of water usually as an example because it's so simple. You all have bought maybe a bottle of water. What are you expecting when you buy a bottle of water? If I'm fulfilling your expectation better than the next guy, I'm going to win. Well, what do you expect when you buy a bottle or a house or a car? You have three subconscious expectations. I know that. That's a fact. No matter what you buy, those three expectations you're going to have. Number one, you want your bottle of water to be defect-free. You don't want it to leak. You don't want to have anything wrong in it. You don't want anything floating in it. You want it to be a clear bottle of water. Defect-free. Whatever you buy, the car, the house, everything, you want it to be defect-free. That's it. That's a subconscious expectation. You don't think about it, but that's what you expect. By the way, subconscious is more important than conscience. stronger. Number two, what you want when you want it. You want timeliness. You don't want to wait for it. You want a bottle of water when you want it. Not when they decide to give it to you, but when you want it. And that is now. Timeliness is extremely important. No defect, timeliness. And number three, what you want the people who give it to you be nice to you. That's it. And here is the crazy thing. The most important driver, the most clearly, the driver that most drives your satisfaction and eventually your loyalty is the caring part, the being nice part. Huh? The defect, for sure. If there was a mistake, if it was leaking the bottle of water, and you said to them, hey, this is leaking. They say, I'm sorry, please forgive us, we change it. You still are satisfied. But if you have a perfect product, timely, and they're not nice, you're not satisfied, no matter what. So the caring part, the very business that we in hospitality in, the very thing that we create, we don't create beds, we don't make beds, we don't make rooms, we make carpets, we make no pillows, we make nothing. What do we create? Service. Caring. That very thing is the greatest driver of customer satisfaction and eventually loyalty by the customer. That's the most important thing you work on, is loyalty. So if I give those three things consistently to the customer, no defect, timeliness and caring, many don't let people wait. That's deeply annoying today. It has become so serious, timeliness, they want everything now. We knew when I opened the first Ritz-Carlton, we knew by our studies, if during rush hour, between 5:30 and 7 o'clock in the evening, mind you, 700 room hotel, if during rush hour, checking in, the guest waited up to 4 minutes, they were okay. So 2 minutes later, we clocked it. 2 minutes, we went out with drinks and said, here, I'm sorry, you have to wait. And so that we would preach that 4 minute situation. Today, it's 20 seconds. That's a fact. Timeliness has become of extreme importance. Everything is now. Everything is now. So no defect, caring. No defect, timeliness, and caring. Those are the three things. And caring is the greatest driver of customer satisfaction. And caring is delivered by everybody in the organization. If that is the housekeeper that has to express caring when a guest goes by, to step away in the corridor and says, good morning, sir. That is expressing caring. That is saying to the guest, you're important. And that's what the guest wants to hear, no matter what level. And no defect, you can work on defect. That means nothing goes wrong. The TV works, the key works, it is clean, 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 clean. Clean is a major thing. Major. It's in the no defect, cleanliness is the most important. And all simple stuff, cleanliness and being nice. That's our business. And we determined that. That's going to be easy. We're going to be clean and we're going to be real nice. And when we make mistakes, we correct them. And we work on our timeliness nonstop. And then we are the best in the world. And guess what? That happens. I can tell you without unequivocally, our worst physical product was at the time our hotel in New York. I had a great general manager who really created cleanliness at the same time and caring. And was voted the top customer satisfaction in the company. And it was the worst product. So the caring counted. So we determined that, we analyzed that, we studied it. We had word analysts in our focus groups, not just listening to what they said, but study the words and identify what they meant. That's how deep we went in our studies. And then we created processes behind everything the customer wanted to make sure the customer gets it all the time. We made a decision to be excellent for the customer. We made a decision, it's not what we want, it's what the customer wants. We made a decision to deliver to the customer what the customer wants. As long as legal, moral, and ethical, we're going to do it. We're going to care for human beings. Wait a minute. All we have to do is really be nice to other human beings, and then we can be the best in the world. Yeah, It was that simple. So we started off, and a year later, we opened our first hotel. We opened our second hotel a few months later. Not a year later, we opened two more new hotels and the one in Boston. So we had five hotels, and we keep on studying what the customer wants and keep on improving, keep on understanding where mistakes are happening, keep on improving everything. But we had many problems. We had employees that were not nice. So we said, what are we going to do about that? What are we going to do about that? That's an issue of leadership. You see, that's an issue of leadership. The employee is not very good. Well, wait a minute. The employee cannot help that he or she was raised wrong by their parents. But you were the dummy that hired them. And you are the one that is training them. So we developed that's what we told ourselves. So we developed a selection process to be sure that we selected the right employees wherever we were. And by the way, it worked in all cultures. It worked. Now I knew I'm ahead of the competition because I'm selecting more careful the employees that I hire. We worked in fact, in Lincoln, Nebraska, there's a company who we worked with. So now we know we're selecting right. That's the processes that we use to have the right employees. Because last year I went to five-star hotels of the world, had a meeting in New York. They got their awards. I was invited as a guest of honor. The host announced, there were about 300 people in the room. The host announced that Horst Schulz is in the room, and everybody got up and applauded. Whom were they applauding? Me? No, they were applauding the reputation that Ritz-Carlton had, which was created by bellmen and doormen and waiters and busboys and maids. They created. I was in my office. They created that reputation. But I can tell you now, they define themselves as people of excellence. They defined themselves. All them, they were applauded there. Of course, I was there. I was nearly embarrassed. I was there and I got the applause. But they do to them. And I can tell you, if today, still today, if an employee, a Ritz-Carlton employee, applies for a job, and the 100 others, the Ritz-Carlton guy gets it because of the reputation, how we defined ourselves. How you define yourself is up to you. At work, we define ourselves as being nicer, being friendlier, being more responsive, be timelier. And on the end, when we worked on it nonstop, we had less mistakes. So what is service? So that's how we define ourselves. What is service? So we were better in giving service, so we defined what service is. We laid it down. We looked at everything. And we said, this very service is really simple. It starts the instant we make contact with a guest. Welcome. Looking them in the eyes and saying, welcome. Make sure the door is clean. Cleanliness, guys. Whatever I say, put cleanliness right in there. If it isn't there, it kills everything. We know that from our studies. I'm not telling you something. But then we thought the first step of service has to be welcome. And then we started when? With behavioral analysis, we knew within 9 feet, yes, 9 feet, you have to say hello to people. Why? Because people make a decision about you within 9 feet. Oh, that's not what society says. Society says you should be looking, thinking all this garbage. It's not true. Because we're human beings, we make a decision. We can't help it. So if I know that you make a decision about me and my business within 9 feet, so I have to make sure you make the good decision. So I look in the eyes. So we taught ourselves, you have to look, no matter what you're going to do, you have to look him in the eyes, smile and say, welcome. And by the way, this is true in all cultures. Mind you, we had hotels in China, in Japan, in the Middle East, all around the world. And we won that way in each location of 55 hotels. 49 were rated number one where they were. And the others were rated number two or three. No coincidence. What did we do different? That's what we did different. Understanding we have to be nice to people, but let them know that we are nice. So the first step of service is welcome. Good afternoon, good morning, or welcome within 9 feet. No matter what you do, look up. Don't keep on talking on the telephone, looking down. Look up and wave. Welcome. Number two in service is complying caringly to the guest's wishes. I'm happy to do that. You need another pillow? My pleasure. I'm happy. You need to, it's my pleasure. I'm here for you. Thank you for allowing me to serve you. Welcome. Compliance. And finally, farewell. Goodbye. That's the simplicity of caring of our industry. That's the simplicity of our industry. Welcome. How can I help you? I want to check in. My pleasure. I'm here to help you. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. And then check in. And then finally, goodbye. Have a nice day. Thank you for allowing us to serve you. With that, those principles, we moved on with in Ritz-Carlton. Started to understand more and more what the customer wants. Started to eliminate mistakes more and more. Started to grow. Started to get a recognition. And understanding what service is. Understanding the guest wants what. They want no defect. They want timeliness. They want caring. And we constantly look how we can do it timelier, how we can do it faster. How can we have less mistakes? How can we be friendlier? How can we be cleaner? Cleaner. I'm going to repeat that several more times, the cleansing, because it's so important. So let's experience that service in another place. Let's just, it doesn't matter what industry you're in. That's what it is. Doesn't matter if you call it patient or clients or customers or guests. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. Welcome. Comply caringly for what I need. Friendly farewell. Thank you for allowing us to serve you. Let's experience that in another business. Let's do it in a bank. True story. I've told it 1,000 times because it makes sense. It hits home. Years ago, about 20 years ago, a couple more years before that, I was asked to talk to a major bank in Chicago about customer service and guest satisfaction, customer loyalty. I'd never been in that bank, but I knew them because they advertised on the radio station, sat in my car, their service. What else can a bank advertise, really? But our bills smell better or what? No. So they advertised their service. I was supposed to talk to 300 of the managers the next morning. That day I thought I better go into the bank to experience it once because somebody is liable to ask me tomorrow, have you been in our bank? So I went to that bank. Go with me. Large stately building, old, large stately building. Impressive. And you step in. Marble floor, stained glass windows, big marble columns. And I mean, you feel the money all around you, maybe some of stuffed in the columns even. And you could feel it, you could stately. And all the way over there, a long counter, mahogany, the tellers, very long counter. And in front of the counter, a maze. I don't know if you have been there. I don't know if you have a big bank here with a maze and so on, but you know what I'm talking about. I went into the maze. Mind you, I just want to experience them. I went into the maze and counted the people in front of me, counted the teller. My goodness, 24 people in front of me and 24 tellers actually working. So, okay, that makes me number two. I'm going to the maze, and pretty soon I'm number one. Mind you, timeliness is important. Remember? No defect, timeliness, and caring. Remember, the first step of service is welcome. It follows by care and compliance. It follows with a farewell. I'm number one. I'm looking left, and somebody on the right screams, next! Whoop! Next. First step of service was next. Welcome is the first step of service. Caring is the first step of service. The first second you make contact with people, you make a decision about them. What kind of a decision am I going to make for with next? I walk over, get to the teller, where there's a lady behind the counter. She looks down for a moment. By the way, thank you. By the way, women, of course, men are worse than men, than women in service generally. But it was a lady behind that teller and arrived there. And she looked down for a moment. I see her face. She doesn't know me. I don't know her, so she doesn't know me. But when she looked up, it was totally clear that she hated me. And she said, yes. Mind you, next and yes. And an angry look. And I said, I just want to change $50. And she sighed, 10, 20, 40, 45, 50. Next. I take my money. I count it. No defect. The product was perfect. The timeliness was perfect. And for the next 15 years, I talked about that bank, not about the teller, about that bank, how lousy they were. Because of the caring. You see, that's what it was. What could she have done? She could have said, the next gentleman, please. And I come to her teller and she says, welcome, sir. How may I help you? Just want to change $50. My pleasure, sir. 10, 20, 45, 50. Have a great day. Thank you for coming by. What? More work? Not at all, but a sense of excellence. In the same job, the same timing, the same effort, everything the same. I'm now a satisfied customer. Before, I was a dissatisfied customer. Watch out. There are three types of customers you're going to have. Three types. One, the dissatisfied customers. They're like terrorists against your company. They look forward to talk negative about you. They're the dissatisfied customers. Watch out. They're terrorists. And then of course, they're satisfied customers. They're okay. But if next door they offer a better deal, that's where they're going to go. They're satisfied. They're not loyal. You see, a company number one works on loyalty. And you get loyalty. If you repeatedly give good service, you get loyalty. But what could she have done? She could have moved, mind you, there are three steps of service, remember. And remember the expectation. The expectation, no defect, timeliness, and caring. But what if I lifted it up a little higher? What I would add to that, individuality and personal service. Person service and individual service. And here's how it goes. What if she would have said, the next gentleman, please. And I come to her teller and she says, welcome, Mr. Schulze. Personalize the service to me. What would have happened to me as a human being? Any human being, don't kid yourself. Yes, you too. I would feel good about it. I would feel a little bit important. And you all want that. We all want that. We all want to be recognized. Yes, Mr. Schulze, how can I help you? Well, how would she know the name? Well, I can tell you, if you check into our hotel, we know your name. We play all kind of tricks to know it. So what if, and what, on one, now, so Monsieur, welcome Mr. Schulze. So I said, what can I do for you? Just change $50. My pleasure, Mr. Schulze. 10, 20, 45. And here are 5 coins, because I know you collect coins. Individualize the service to me. Responding to me. If a guest says he likes chocolate cookies in our hotel, next time they check in, they have chocolate cookies in the room. We know that. We constantly try to identify and record what a customer wants and doesn't want. If a guest sleeps in our bed and is there more than one night, and the slippers on the left side, but you can see they slept on the right side, the next night the slippers on the right side. Individualizing our service constantly to the customer. That's what we do, and that's what we try to stand by, to know what you want, to care for you as a human beings, us as human beings caring for you. But that takes the right hiring, as I start off, the right selection, and that takes leadership. It is not only the right selection, it takes the right orientation, because here's what happens. The most important thing, leaders, is the orientation of a new employee. The orientation of a new employee is essential. What happens usually? We hire people. We don't select people, we hire people. Because particularly our business, we are always short of people. When I hear about unemployment all those years, it makes me sick, because there's not one hotel in the United States who doesn't need somebody. And everybody needs somebody. So what do we do? Because we're in such need of people, we just hire anybody who walks in. Here's how we hire. If the guy can't walk from there to here without falling down because he's too drunk, he's qualified. We stopped this. We started to individualize our hiring. We started to select through a company. We were very careful selecting. And then we done the first day of work. What do we do the first day of work? Here's where it goes. In nearly every company that I've ever worked with, and I have worked and I'm working with a lot of companies. Here's how it hired. The first day they come in, Joe comes in, the new waiter. The manager gives his stupid team speech. We are a team here, Joe. We are a team. We work together. We are a team. Well, wait a minute. What is a team? A team is a group of people who have a common objective, a common goal, a common purpose. In that moment, I invite you to come and join our purpose. Not just say we are a team here. Here, team. It's not enough to be a team. But how does it go, that new chap? They come in, Joe comes in, the new waiter comes in. And the manager said, we are a team here, we work together, blah, blah. Work with Bill, he knows the ropes. You're not in the rope business, but somehow Bill knows something about ropes. So Joe works with Bill. On the way to the kitchen, Bill is here 9 months already. He knows the ropes. So you work with him. On the way to the kitchen, Bill tells Joe, this company sucks. That's his orientation. What do we expect? What do we expect? Orientation is a key moment. We invite people to the day of orientation. We say, join us. Don't work for us. Join us. Join us in our dream. Join us in our purpose. That's who we want to be in 3 years from now. You have to do that as a department head. You have to do that as a division head. You have to do that whenever you bring a new employee and show him a purpose. Ladies and gentlemen, I said in the beginning, Aristotle and every analyst, behavioral analyst since, and every philosopher since, says that people, if they know it or not, need purpose and belonging. Why not offer them a purpose? Here is our dream. Join us in that purpose. If they do or not, is not a leader's business. But morally, we have to offer a purpose. Here it is. Join us. Don't work. Join us in a dream. But come to work, not for work, not fulfill a function. Ladies and gentlemen, the chair in which you're sitting is fulfilling a function. We're human beings. We have to reach higher. And that is purpose. Where do you as an individual, what about the leadership of you individually, you leading yourself? What is your dream? Or do you just work for work itself? And somebody, when I said and turned around, somebody screamed, I work for money. Yeah. Wait a minute, who is going to make more money in the end? The one that has a purpose and creates excellence, or the one that just works? I guarantee you the one with a purpose will make more money. So it's purpose and belonging. And that's more fulfilling. We know from every study, more fulfilling than anything else in our life other than spiritual fulfillment. It's being part of something and purpose. And what we talk as companies, the buzzwords in companies now is alignment, blah, 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 alignment. And then we call them all kind of different names and not employees anymore. That's okay. But if they're associated, then they should know what they're associated to. What are they associated to? We show them that during the orientation. We said, here's who we are. I did every orientation, every new hotel. Every new hotel, 55 hotels, I did the orientation. Or hotel takeovers. I did the orientation. Said, here is who we are. Join us. Here's our soul, our heart, our dream. Join us in a dream. Join us in a purpose. Become part. How are you part? You're part, not by working. We are part if you're part of a dream. Now you're part. Now you are aligned. If you know the objective and the dream of the organization, of your department, and know what the customer expects, in that moment you are aligned. Alignment is the big word out there. By the way, so is empowerment. It's another big word. And by the way, in Ritz-Carlton, here's what I did. After we were there for a while and I knew we have to empower, I empowered every employee to assure that the guest is loyal, that every employee can make a decision up to $2,000 to make sure the guest is loyal. Every employee, the bus boys, yes, if necessary, the dishwasher, can make a decision if it assures that if the customer has a problem, that the customer is still loyal. Why did I do that? Because I was crazy, but many people thought so. Our owners thought so. Some people sued me for it. But I knew that the average age of our customer was 43 years old. They could travel another 30 years. By what they spent, they would spend $150,000 to $200,000. It would be worthwhile for me $2,000 to keep $200,000. That's why. To make guests loyal. The most important thing is loyalty. And so I hire new employees. I orient them. We tell them who we are. We don't just say, go over here and work. We tell them who we are. We let them know we want to be part. We want to be part of a dream that they would benefit from. Because if we are seen as the very best, you will be benefited. You will be defined as the very best. Not difficult to figure out. Fact. Those are facts. So we worked on those facts. We worked more and more, studied what the guest wants. We more and more eliminated defects. We constantly study if a mistake happens more than once. We put a team together and figure out why the mistake happens. Why did this mistake happen? Not, it happened there, why did you do that? No, let's join the team. Let's find out why this happened. And let's find out the root cause. Eliminate the root cause. This way it will never happen again. So we limited one mistake after the other, studied and so on, one and did less and less mistake. And by the way, that creates efficiency. We in the hotel business, I don't know your other businesses, we in the hotel business are extremely well good in cutting cost. Cutting cost is kind of every hotel, not yours, every hotel, cutting cost. Let's make the soap a little smaller. Let's have one less towel in the room. And we're cutting costs. How do we cut costs? By taking away from the customer. We decided we got cutting costs by eliminating our mistakes that cost money. Because when you make a mistake, you have to do it over again. And that costs money. And you get complaints. And that costs money. And you lose customer that way. And that costs money. We concentrated on eliminating mistakes together and involved every employee. We studied everything. And we measured everything. I still measure everything in the hotels I'm connected with. I created another hotel company called Capella, which is ultra luxury. We have few. I sold the company, but I'm obligated still overlooking the hotels. We measure everything. I know every morning the customer, how many percent of the customers want to come back and want to recommend us. I expect that 92% top box on a scale of 1 to 10. When 1 is lousy, 10 is perfect. I only accept 9s and 10s. Why 9s? Because some people will never give a 10. I'm one of them. No matter what, I'm not going to give a 10. Because nothing is perfect. So I give a 9. But that's why we count 9s and 10. I expect that at least 92% of our guests say, I want to come back and want to recommend you. If it drops lower, I'm on the telephone with the managers. That once a month, I get the report every morning. I know in every hotel, every day, what yesterday the customers were thinking. I know what the employees are thinking by studies. I know the financials, and I know the future indicators of it. I know in minutes, I can tell in 50 hotels what's going on. But the main thing I concentrate on is customer satisfaction. It's the customer, ladies and gentlemen. It's the guest that we take care of. It's their satisfaction that makes us feel well, that gives us more business, that gives us more income, that gives us more opportunity, that gives us more honor, gives us more recognition. So I measure everything. If it gets corrected,
fine. If it gets corrected in a couple of months, fine. If it keeps on going down, I threaten the hotels, and I've done it more than once. If it goes in the middle 80s, I will move in the hotel and correct it. That's the biggest threat to the channel manager. They really love it if I move to the hotel and correct it. And I've done it a number of times. I went to New York, we had a new hotel, and we dropped into the low 80s. I moved in, 3 months later, we went 96%. What did I do? What did I do to move from mid 80s to 96% of the guests saying, and by the way, first year, 1 year operation, and we voted number one in New York, and there are a lot of hotels in New York. Number one in New York. What did I do? Something very secret. I tell you the secret. I moved in, and I talked to the employees every day and said, be nice. Let's be nice to each other. Let's be nice and respect each other. Let's create a great environment in us looking each other in the eyes and be nice. You see, all of us want to have a great work environment. Well, get it. The people in the environment are responsible for the environment. If you come to work and if Bill comes to work, or what was it, Joe, and walks by Bill and says, morning, Bill, what do you think Bill is going to do? He said, morning, Bill. Next day, that's what it is. But if he says, good morning, Bill, nice to see you, Bill may just answer. But if he does it four times in a row, Bill will say, good morning, Joe, how are you? So he created his own work environment. So I talked to everybody about that, and I talked to everybody about being nice to the guest, caring, having a heart, respecting the guest, caring for guests. And guess what? 3 months later, it was 96%. And we were voted best hotel in New York. And all I did, ask the employees, and all the employees did different. They stepped aside when the guest walked by and said, good morning, sir. Have a wonderful day. We started caring. We started projecting other guests that we knew that they're important to us. That if they're happy, that we will be respected. That if they're happy, that we will have more guests. And if we have more guests, that we have more opportunity. That we have eventually, because of it, more money. Yes, more money is important. But that we knew that because of them, we would refine ourselves as employees, as professionals of excellence, as ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen. That's what we did. No big deal. That's what we did. At the same time, as we upgraded that, I kept on telling them the dream to be respected as the best in New York. That was a dream, and they joined me in the dream. And they were consequently had a purpose and felt like belonging. I didn't pay more. We didn't put more employees on. We didn't change a process. We just communicate together and show them how we are in it together, how that we are in a boat together, and if there's a hole, that boat sinks with all of them, all of us, but if we block the hole, no matter who it is that blocks it, that we will all survive. And that's how we work the hotel business, and that's the story of Ritz-Carlton. There was nothing else unusual, nothing secret when reporters came to me in the office and said, so what is it? They said, well, it's just service. Well, everybody does that. Yeah, but we aligned everybody, and everybody knew it, and everybody was smart enough, the employees were smart enough to understand that by their excellence, by our combined commitment to excellence, our combined commitment to caring for people, we all would benefit, all. Back to the last maid, the back housekeeper, because we had now the job with a lot of business and we could pay more. We now had a job, we now had opportunity, we had respect. When we said we work for Ritz-Carlton, people respected us no matter who we were. We got a job if we applied for a job because we were connected. They got it. They were smart enough to get it. And that's what it really all amounts to. It amounts to being smart enough to get it. It amounts to make the decision for excellence. It's all about a decision. No matter what in life, if you either you make the decision for something excellent or decision for something secondary. I give a silly example often. I'm married for 40 years.
I don't only love my wife, I'm still in love with my wife. That was a decision I made. It's not I didn't wait for the feeling, and my friends of mine who get in divorce said, we don't feel like it anymore. What does it have to do with feeling? Either I am in charge of my feeling, or the feeling is in charge of me. What do you feel about your job? Some people go to work to the same job happy, and others detest it. It's the decision to like it or the decision not to like it. A decision evolves or a decision is made in the same time. It's up to each one to create excellence and define themselves as a person of excellence. And of course, leadership has to help to hire the right people, orient the right people, support the right people. But leadership has no right to make excuses. Leadership has no right. Managers, the moment you became a manager, let me submit that to you, you have forfeited the right to make excuses. Managers are not hired to make excuses. Managers are hired to make decisions and find solutions. Solutions for the issues. So no matter what. Yeah, well, you don't understand an excuse. I'll give you a fine example. For example, in everything, managers make decisions. Leaders make decisions. In the individual leadership of yourself, you too make decisions, each person. What am I going to do? What am I going to think about that? And then work on that decision. Managers, I can tell you, leaders, you forfeit the right about your business making excuses. I hear every excuse. I visit a hotel, traveling out, even with hired at 65 hotels, I was responsible for food and beverage operations. Visit the hotel, I talk to a general manager, so what will you do with the hotel a year from now? And the answer is, what will your hotel that you are running now, what will it be a year from now in this community? Yeah. If I had a bigger ballroom, what's that? It's an excuse. Yes, your ballroom was small, but it's an excuse. If my restaurant was not on the second floor, but the first floor, excuse. Now go to the similar hotel in another city, and I say, Now that you're here a year, what will your hotel be? What's your plan for this hotel a year from now? A year from now, this will be respected as the greatest hotel in the city. This will be respected. People, when we say that we work in that hotel, people will turn around to look at us because they know we are special. One was a manager. The other one was a leader. The leader makes no excuses. The manager often does. But the manager has given up. The model of management, the model of leadership is to have a clear purpose and a vision. Write it down, vision, purpose. Establish it for yourself individually and for your department. I establish it, we establish it clearly as a Ritz-Carlton. This is who we are going to be. No matter what, we made a decision. We are going to be the leader in the hotel industry worldwide. Was a decision before we had one hotel. Was a reason to come to work. Was a purpose. And we offered everybody to join us in this dream. That was a vision purpose. The next thing comes after you have that as a leader, to have to be committed to it. It cannot be just a pipe dream. That's the model. The model is vision, purpose. Commitment. And the next step is to initiate a step that gets you to be the best. And the next step is, and that's where people break down, is keeping focus on it. Because the moment when you have a vision, because you're human, you find a reason why it will not work. Then you have to have the inner fortitude to focus on the vision. And managers, that's your role. That is the role for me as a leader. I did not let them forget the vision of wanting to be, that we are here to be the best in the world. No one, all people came to me, every vice president, everybody had a reason why we couldn't do it there, and why we couldn't do it in Mexico, why it has never been done in Japan. I said, I want solutions. You have no right to say no. I want solutions. How are we going to be the best in Japan? How are we going to be the best in Germany? How are we going to be the best in every country that we were, 18 countries? Everywhere. Because I made no excuses. I didn't allow to make excuses. I didn't compromise. Because, here it is, because I knew that vision, that purpose would be good for all concerned. Leaders, managers, if you establish a vision for your department, be sure you agonize with yourself and question yourself, is this good for all concerned? Is this good for the investors? Is this good for the guest? Is this good for the employee? And is that good for society? If the answer is an unequivocal yes, as it was for us, it was very clear that if we will be respected as the very best in the world, it would be good for the investors. It would be good for the guest. It would be good for the employees. And it would be good for society at large around us. In that moment, I had no right to compromise. In that moment, my role was clear, to keep focus on this vision and keep people focusing on this vision because it's good for everyone. And if I compromise for one, I will hurt everybody. I had no more right to do that. Consequently, I had find the right why it could not be done. I had no more right. I determined this is good for everybody. And that's what you have to do for your department, in fact, for yourself. And that's frankly how I live since this Maitre D' said, don't come to work for work. Come to work. Don't sentence yourself to mediocrity. Average is the bottom of good and the top of bad. It's nothing. Do more. Come to work to be excellent, not to work more hours, not to do much more, but to be excellent. And then, of course, it went by me as a young man, but I saw it more and more. And after I wrote my essay about it, I nearly was painted in the corner. I had to do it. Now I wrote about it, I had to do it. And I made it my motto, ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen. And I'm only a lady or a gentleman, if I create excellence in what I'm doing. Remember, working, the chair on which you're sitting is working. We're human beings, we have to reach for more. And we have to give more to the people that work for us. Good luck and thank you very much.